Today on Maine Calling, Best and Overlooked Books 2024. This cold, windy day is just perfect. Perfect to curl up on the couch and read a book. And you can bet there will be plenty more perfect days to come. That's why we bring you our annual Best and Overlooked Books show. Sure, today you'll get ideas for Hanukkah gifts and Christmas presents, but you can also add to your own winter reading list. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we celebrate your favorite books of 2024. What did you read this year that you just can't wait to recommend to others? Why? Did the book make you laugh out loud? Help you understand the world in a different way? Send your heart racing? By all means, share. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to island and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Get ready to take notes, because over the course of the next hour, I am certain you will hear the titles of at least a few books you're going to want to add to your reading list. Yes, it is time for our annual Best and Overlooked Books show. And joining me for the hour, Kenneth C. Davis, author and historian. You know him from his many appearances on Maine Calling, his Don't Know Much About History series, his recent published work, The World in Books, 52 Works of Great Short Nonfiction. And also with us today, Emily Russo, who is co-owner of Print, a bookstore, and Print's more than a bookstore, community gathering place, lots of authors featured all the time, so you have to check out their event schedule. We invite you to join the conversation. Which book did you read this past year that stuck with you or that you passed along to family or friends? Maybe you're buying a whole bunch of them to give away. Share that. Let us know about it. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. And also, call early, because we're going to get a lot of calls this hour. We're going to get a lot of emails. We don't want you to wait till the end. We want to get your recommendation on the air. So 1-800-399-3566. Emily, I know that asking a bookstore owner to name a favorite book is paramount to naming your favorite child, but I'm going to make you do it. Tell, just, you know, maybe the word isn't favorite, but what's a book that keeps coming up when people come into the store and ask for a recommendation?
Well, certainly in terms of best-selling titles, I got to say probably All Fours by Miranda July is probably the one that sticks out the most, and one that I read and absolutely loved. So that's definitely one of my favorites of the year. But if we're going to talk about one that's truly kind of underrated and hasn't been given the claim that it deserves, I would say Danzy Senna's Colored Television is probably my favorite book of the year. It is a just wonderful dark comedy about a biracial novelist named Jane, who has just been told that her second book, which she's been working on, I think for almost a decade, if I'm not mistaken, in which her husband has started to call the Mulatto War and Peace, isn't going to be published. Her editor says no one's going to understand it. It's too broad. It's going nowhere. She's desperate. They're about to be kicked out of the sublet that they're living in. And so Jane decides to take the advice of another friend of hers and turn to Hollywood, and is hired to create and write what the jacket copy calls the Jackie Robinson of biracial comedies. And of course, nothing goes according to plan. The writing in this book is so sharp. It's so funny. It's unbelievably spot on. It is, of course, in many ways uncomfortable, but in the best possible way. It is really a book for anybody who loves literary fiction, but particularly if you were a fan of maybe Paul Beattie's The Sellout, Black Buck by Matteo Oscarapour, forgive me if I've got that pronunciation wrong, R.F. Kuang's Yellow Face, maybe even Hell of a Book by Jason Mott, and of course her husband's own book, Erasure by Percival Everett, who was this year's National Book Award winner for James.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat those. I might not be able to keep up all hour, but Danzy Senna, yeah. Colored Television. I yeah. see that the Good Morning America picked it as a book club pick, so you're not alone in yeah. your love for it.
Yeah, that is true. I wish it was getting a little bit more attention than I feel like it has been getting.
And then the other book you mentioned was All Fours by Miranda
by
July.
Miranda July, yes, which okay. was on the short list for the National Book Award this year.
Okay, Kenneth C. Davis. Ken, what's your choice for what books would you like to call out?
Well, there are quite a few. Having written two books recently that include more than 50 books that have been overlooked and not so overlooked, I have quite a few to draw on. But I'm going to start, because I was a bookseller once, and in honor of Emily, there's a lovely new book called The Bookshop, A History mm-hmm. of the American Bookstore, which is, certainly attracted my attention. I've been around books and bookselling all my life. So that one has sort of caught my eye. I haven't read it yet. I'm going to call attention to a novel that I just heard the author speak. It's a really fascinating story. It's called The Stone Witch of Florence. The author is Anna, I believe it's Rashi or Raschi. I'm not sure, R-A-S-C-H-E. Says in one of the listings that she's originally from Maine. So there you go. It is set in 1348 Florence, which everyone knows is the year that Boccaccio wrote the Decameron. So it's Florence during the plague. It is about a woman who has the ability to heal people through stones, through gems, which is something that was believed in the Middle Ages. So it's a fascinating historical novel set in plague-bound Florence. And obviously, since we've all lived through plague-bound years, it has some interest of that. And then I have one that's an older book that I've just finished, which is just wonderful. And I think it's overlooked because it is a bit old. I'd never heard of it until recently. It's called Household Saints by Francine Prose. It's set in New York City's Little Italy, kind of beginning in the post-war years, the 1940s to 50s, and it goes on from there. And it begins with the lovely idea that a man wins his wife in a pinochle game, and it goes on from there. It has echoes of, I don't know, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and maybe Like Water for Chocolate, a little bit of magical realism, as these the man who owns a sausage factory or a sausage store meets and wins his wife to be in a pinochle game, and it goes on from there. No more spoilers, but it's really a lovely book, and I'd never read Francine Prose before, and the writing is exquisite. So those two are on my fiction list. And of course, since I write nonfiction, a lot of nonfiction, I'm very much on point with that. Two books that I'm especially interested in right now. One is Climate from A to Z by Elizabeth Colbert. Mm-hmm. I included Elizabeth Colbert's previous book, Under a White Sky, in The World in Books, my recent collection of nonfiction. This is another book that started out in The New Yorker. Elizabeth Colbert is one of the finest writers of our time. She's a New Yorker writer, really focuses on climate, the environment, and science, and in the biggest sense, the fate of the earth. So that's an important book. And on a much smaller scale, I come across a book that I haven't started yet, but I read an excerpt. It's called The Wisdom of Sheep. And it is about a woman goes back to her family sheep farm in the Cotswolds. And I think it will probably appeal to those who like, all creatures great and small. And I think we're all thinking these days that maybe going off to a sheep farm might be the best possible idea.
So I caught four. I have The Bookshop by Evan Friss, Household Saints by Francine Prose, Climate from A to Z from Elizabeth Colbert, and Wisdom of Sheep, and it looks like it's by Rosamund Young. Ken, the second book that was The Plague in Florence, what was that called?
That is called The Stone Witch of Florence, and the author is Anna Raschi, Raschi, and I'm sorry if I've mispronounced her name. I heard her speak last week here in New York City, and was instantly captivated by the idea of the book. And she is a gemologist by training, worked at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in the gem section, and got fascinated by reading what are called lapidaries from the medieval era, books about gems and stones. And a 10-year passion with this subject turned into this novel, and it's I've started it. It's really interesting.
So, Kenneth, thank you so much. And the whole rest of the hour, I know, is going to be a whirlwind of book recommendations. But I want to step back just a little bit and kind of ask about trends. Kenneth, you mentioned that maybe some of us might like to live on a sheep farm right now, maybe a sheep farm that doesn't have internet access. But Emily, let me ask you if you are seeing trends right now and what people want to buy when they come in the bookstore. Are people looking for something light? Are people looking for something serious? What is sort of the vibe of your customer base?
Oh gosh, I feel like it really runs the gamut. We do have customers who are coming in looking for exactly like something, the world of what was the title again? The world of sheep. Looking for, we're still selling Robin Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, and of course her new book, The Service Berry, just came out, and we are have already sold out of our initial order of almost 70 books for that title. So I think people really are kind of looking for that. Ways to disconnect back to the earth, nature writing, that is certainly something we're seeing. Horror is continuing to have a moment. So we're selling a lot of horror novels, and of course what they're calling romanticy, which is the Sarah J. Maas Sarah J. Maas writers of the
Wait a
world.
minute. I don't know about this romanticy. What's that?
Romance, yes, it is a combination of fantasy books that are heavily romantic. And so they've coined the term romanticy, and Sarah J. Maas is, I probably shouldn't say the one that kicked it off, but she is certainly probably the most well-known of that genre. And she's a writer that we are having trouble keeping up with the demand for.
You mentioned Braiding Sweetgrass, and I have to tell you, Emily, we've done this program now for years, and this book always comes up. And indeed, we have an email already from Carrie. The best book I've ever read is called Braiding Sweetgrass by
Sweet
Robin Wall
grass.
Kimmerer, an indigenous woman with a PhD in botany. She ties life lessons to the science of plants with beautiful stories from an indigenous point of view. I ate this book up like word salad, slowly devouring each word. It is so beautifully written, awe-inspiring, and life-changing. Highly recommend. So, the streak continues for Braiding Sweetgrass. And also, I have to tell you, one of our favorite people on Maine Calling is Monica Wood. And guess what? People
Oh,
are
man.
already recommending How to Read a
How
Book
to read a
by
book, of course.
Monica Wood. And Donna writes, she came and met my African gray parrot, Zimmy, as research for the book. I work at a library and tell everybody Zimmy was the bird on the cover. He and Monica are buddies now. So
Oh.
anyway, already recommendations coming in. Let's see here. We'll go, let's see here. We will go to Deborah, who's calling from Surrey. Hi, Deborah, go ahead.
Hi, I'd like to tell you about a book that I have been reading and really enjoy and share with others. So it's The Land Between the Rivers, and it's written by Todd Nelson. And this book is a wonderful collection of thoughts on nature and place. There's a hint of E.B. White, but Nelson has brought these concepts to a contemporary audience. His writing reflects how humans interact with nature. The words become images, and the images enrich the words. It's really a great read.
All right. Well, thank you for that recommendation, Deborah. Recommending The Land Between the Rivers. Okay. So I think David in Bucksport is recommending the same book. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Well, the timing's great. I'll focus on the fact that I was lucky enough to meet Todd many years ago when we both showed up as bagpipe players at the Maine St. Andrews Pipes and Drums band practice. So I knew him as a fellow piper before I discovered I'd been listening to his short stories being read by him on public radio. So it's been many years of appreciating his writing, his reading, and his piping and his friendship. So I really heartily recommend his writing. The Land Between the Rivers is full of our shared humanity and our love for the planet and all the creatures that inhabit this space that we love.
So, okay, David, nice thank you very much for that recommendation, but I have to ask you where you are right now.
Oh, I'm sitting in a waiting room for a friend who's at a medical appointment. But
okay, I thought you might be at a bookstore because I heard a ding. Anyway, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Two callers recommending The Land Between the Rivers by Todd R. Nelson. And let's see, we'll go to Ashley, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. There are a lot of people that have emotional problems, and that can be childhood or as an adult. So I would recommend The Five Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. There's the short version of the book, and then there's the long version, and they're both, you can read them about an hour or two at most. And if you memorize the five agreements, you'll find one that resonates with you more than any. And the most important agreement is don't take things personally, because that can get you into legal problems and a world of trouble for people that have unhealed trauma. And then the fifth agreement is listen, but be very skeptical, because people like to lie. And then there's three other agreements, and you read the book and it gives you ideas about how to live the life that you want to live, not that other people want you to live. And then the other book that I recommend is by any Byron Katie book. She's written three books, but I Need Your Love, Is That True? And then there's a 4 to 6 question. It's called The Work. And if you do the work, you can help yourself to resolve problems that have been dogging you for years. So I highly recommend both of those books as a healer. And thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, Ashley, thanks so much for calling in. We are going to go to a quick break. We want to have your book suggestions. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the best and overlooked books of the year and other years, too, let's be honest. With me, Emily Russo, who is co-owner of Print a Bookstore, and author and historian Kenneth C. Davis. His two most recent books are about great works of short fiction and nonfiction, so he's been reading a lot. Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Taryn Bow, Associate Director with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. She is a fiction writer whose story Camp Emmeline was anthologized in the Best American Short Stories of 2023 and was read by Edie Falco on the show Selected Shorts at New York Symphony Space. Taryn, congratulations and thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. What a cool episode. I'm excited to talk more.
Okay, your turn. Share your recommendations. What were your favorite reads of the year?
Okay, so my favorite book, which I think a lot of different types of people could enjoy, was probably Beautyland, a novel by Marie-Helene Bertino. And okay. I don't know if you all are familiar with it. It's about a girl growing up in the 80s and 90s who is convinced she's an alien, and she is communicating with the planet that she believes her people are on through a fax machine she found, which sounds really zany, but which is why I picked it up, because I didn't, you know, understand how it could be so cool. But it's really lovely and great and surprising, and just, you know, talking a lot about what it means to be alive and to live inside a body kind of apart from, but also surrounded by other people. So that I loved. I also really loved Daniel Mason's North Woods, which I know came out in 2023, I believe, but I didn't get to it until this year, and highly would recommend that. Another novel, although it's written in stories almost about a home and its inhabitants over a period of like a couple centuries in Massachusetts. And then one more that really stood out to me this year was a story collection by Paul Yoon, The Hive and the Honey. It won the Story Prize, and it's about refugees from Korea at all different moments in time all over the globe trying to make lives and, you know, homes for themselves. And it was just really beautiful. And each story was pretty different. And I would highly recommend that to folks who like short stories.
Taryn, I so appreciate these recommendations. I want to ask you, because you're with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, as well as being an author yourself, which local, and I know this is really hard too, which local authors, which Maine authors would you like to give a shout out to?
Oh, yeah, this is a great question and definitely very hard, as you say. Let's see. I've heard really great things about Monica Wood's new book, which is one of the only books of hers I haven't read yet, but folks have been like texting me outside of Maine to say, have you read or heard of How to Read a Book by Monica Wood? It's great. I'm loving it. So I'm looking forward to reading that in the future. Right now I'm reading a poetry collection by Maya Williams, Refused a Second Date. And it's about their experience dating men and women in like in this age, you know, online and in person. And it's just a really great mix of humor and soul and heart and smarts. Another writer who has a book coming out next year and had a book out last year is Nick Fuller Googins. He wrote The Great Transition, which is a climate utopia almost, but it's also a dystopia, although the humans kind of managed to figure some stuff out. And he has a new book, The Frequency of Living Things, that's due out next summer. He just writes with like a wonderful generosity of spirit about people and their experiences in a way that I admire. So I'd keep him on your radar too. And there's so many more, but I know you have multiple people calling in with lots of great ideas. But those are a few.
Taryn, thanks so much for calling in. Taryn Bowe with the Associate Director with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And Emily, I know you're jumping out of your chair because when somebody says Maine authors, you know them all and you've read them. Well, I can't say you've read them all because I don't think anybody has enough time in the day.
No.
We have such an embarrassment of riches here in Maine when it comes to writers. Go ahead.
Sorry. I keep interrupting you. I have two this year that really stood out to me in terms of ones that I can't stop thinking about. The first one is Jessica Anthony's The Most. I don't want to say that this book was overlooked because it was on the long list for the National Book Award, but I do think she on the whole is underappreciated. But I think she has such a unique voice and her writing is so tight and packs a real punch. Some of you might remember Enter the Aardvark, which was published just as the pandemic hit in March of 2020. And that was such a brilliant book that did not get the attention that it deserved because, again, the pandemic hit and the event that we were supposed to have for it, unfortunately, got canceled. It eventually moved to Zoom, but
it was a Maine Public Book Club pick. So, yeah, go on.
Oh, yes, that's right. But I think The Most is a wonderful, just sparse little novel. I don't think it's any more than 150 pages, I don't think. And it takes place over the course of a single day in, I believe, November, and follows a young mom in the 1950s who decides to go swimming on this cold November day, although it's not too cold, but probably too cold to go swimming. And she absolutely refuses to get out of the pool, despite the fact that the pool is not really open. It's too cold to be swimming and she's starting to prune. And of course, as you read the book, you find out why she is refusing to get out of the pool. And then the other one that I just can't stop thinking about is Sarah Bronstein's Bad Animals. I think she's another local author who deserves more acclaim. And Bad Animals was one of those books that you just can't help but but sit with for a really long time. I read it back in the spring and I found it just riveting, and it's very unsettling, but again, in the best way, it makes you think. It touches on so many different topics and feelings: obsession, desire, culpability, putting idols, in this case, it was a fictional famous white male writer, up on a pedestal, who's allowed to co-opt and tell another story. And I personally, I love writers who ask very difficult questions, and they might write an answer, but they're not necessarily saying that this is the answer. The question is the most important part. They're not saying, here, I solved this for you. They're saying, hey, I'm thinking about this too. What do you think about this?
Ken.
I'm thinking about some books that are in the world in books, specifically of a Mainer's book that I think is overlooked because Rachel Carson, who lived on an island off the coast of Maine in the towards the end of her life, wrote her first book called Under the Sea Wind. And I think most people know Rachel Carson for Silent Spring, of course. This was the first in a trilogy of books about the ocean. I included it in the world in books because it is really magical writing, great backstory to it. She was working as a freelance writer for the Bureau of Fisheries during the Great Depression. She was supposed to write a pamphlet about the Bureau of Fisheries, wrote this piece, gave it to her boss, and he said, I can't publish this. It's too good. She took it to the Atlantic Magazine, which published it. It was then turned into a book, which came out fittingly today, just around Pearl Harbor Day. Of course, tomorrow is December 7th. And so the book really disappeared when it was published. When she became famous later on, the book was brought back into print, but it's a wonderful book and it has a main connection. So I would mention that. The other one I included in The World in Books was a really important book, I think, for this time right now. It's called A Chill in the Air by Iris Origo. And it is her wartime diary. She was an Anglo-American woman raised in Italy. She married an Italian. They went off into the hills of Tuscany and bought a large estate that they were going to restore. But she kept a diary that begins in 1938 and goes up to the beginning of the war in 1939. So it's about life in Mussolini's Italy as people are waiting for the war. Is it going to start? Is it not going to start? It's brilliantly written. I think it's an important book for our time because it talks about the danger of authoritarianism, the danger of fascism. So in that sense, I think it's a very timely book. And I think it's probably an overlooked book to most people, just came back into press into print from the New York Review of Books.
Calling in now is Emily Connolly. She's assistant editor at Audiophile Magazine. Emily, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me on again.
I know that Audiophile Magazine recently released its annual list of great listens. We're talking about what we used to call books on tape, audiobooks. Would you care to share a few of your favorites?
Oh, absolutely. So I should say quickly, Audiophile Magazine is an audiobook review magazine that's based right in Portland, in Maine. We shared out our list of 2024 best audiobooks. There's, I think, even more than 50 books on there. There's so many things to listen to. One of my favorites from the list was written by Hanif Abdurraqib, and he narrated it as well. That was There's Always This Year on Basketball and Ascension. And it was just so great to get to listen to him narrate that and then get to see him in person at Space this fall.
Wonderful.
And then a teen favorite, a young adult favorite that I really enjoyed was Canto Contigo by Johnny Garza Villa, narrated by Alejandro Antonio Ruiz, about two mariachi singers who are competing for their high school band's top singer spot, and then they wind up falling in love. So both were really great audiobooks to get to listen to.
Wonderful. Tell us about your magazine, how people can find this list. Is it something that's accessible to everyone?
Yes. So we have our website, audiophilemagazine.com. So you can visit us there. There's a magazine you can subscribe to. And we also have a podcast, actually, called Behind the Mic with Audiophile Magazine. And right now we have interviews on there with some of the best audiobook narrators, including Julia Whalen, who just was interviewed about, I don't know if it came up yet on the podcast or on this today, but The Women by Kristen Hannah was one of the biggest audiobooks this year. And so you get to hear Julia Whalen talking about narrating that historical fiction.
Wonderful. And Emily, I know my mom loved Kristen Hannah books. They must be very popular, right, Emily?
Oh, so popular, especially to listen to.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Emily, for calling in. Emily Connolly, assistant editor at Audiophile Magazine. We'll go to Rich, who's calling from Moosehead. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call today. I would like to give a shout out to a poet from New England named Ralph Snedden, and he can be found on Eastover Press. His latest book of poetry is Legible Element, and my favorite by him is Surface Fuge, and his books are contemporary books on life on the coast, sailing, surfing, in light of Rachel Carson, that type of poetry. I really enjoy it.
All right. Well, thank you, Rich, for calling in with that recommendation. I'm going to turn to Emily and Kenneth. Tell us if you have any books of poetry to recommend to add to Rich's recommendation.
You've stumped me there.
I don't think that's ever happened before, Ken. I don't think I've ever stumped you. Let's see. It is December 6, 2024. Okay. Emily, what about you?
I do love, I'll just throw this one out because I heard the translator. The novelist, Giorgio Bassani, who's most famous for The Garden of the Finzi Quintinis, made into a wonderful film by Visconti. Bassani wrote poetry as well, and I just heard the translator of the Bassani poetry do some of those works, and it was quite wonderful to hear a translator read the original Italian and then the English version, and we talked about the trials and tribulations of translating poetry, which is even more complicated, obviously, than translating prose. So the collected poetry of Giorgio Bassani, if you're really looking for something overlooked.
All right. Emily, do you have a recommendation for poetry?
Josh would be better suited to this. I'm going to certainly echo Taryn's recommendation of Maya Williams' work, a former poet laureate of Portland. But I would say certainly Ocean Vuong, Time as a Mother, is one of my favorites for my very limited reading of poetry. But the other one I want to highlight is Sarah Kay's No Matter the Wreckage, which is SCB Press, I believe. That was been published several years ago, but is one of our perennial bestsellers at print in the poetry section.
Okay, great. So many recommendations coming in on email. Let's see here. An email from Lynn with five recommendations. Eastbound by Melis de Katanga. Mm-hmm. Signal Fires by Danny Shapiro. Again, The Land Between Two Rivers by Todd Nelson. Sandwich by Catherine Newman. And Berman Wood by Eleanor Catton. So, Lynn, thank you so much for those recommendations. We want to hear your recommendations. Are you sitting there listening to this program and bursting with a recommendation? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and today we are discussing the best and overlooked books of the year. My guest, Emily Russo, co-owner of Print, a bookstore, and Kenneth C. Davis, author and historian. His most recent book is The World in Books, 52 Works of Great Short Nonfiction. You can join our conversation. We'd love it. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, or if you're really fast, you can post on Facebook or Instagram. We had an earlier social media post asking for people's book recommendations, dozens and dozens of recommendations, several mentions of James, several mentions mm-hmm. of The Women, and several mentions for Demon Copperfield. And as far as main books, we had the choices Berry Pickers and Fire Exit. So that's what happened. I'm going to step back a little bit, though, and ask something I said about another program last week. You know, there are only 24 hours in a day, and we have busy lives. And sometimes it's hard to find time to read, especially a big book. Kenneth, how do you do it? How do you do everything you do and still find time to read?
Well, this is the reason I wrote Great Short Books and then followed it up more recently with The World in Books. I discovered during the pandemic that with all the doom scrolling and screens and looking at the between the pandemic and the politics, I had stopped reading. And I know that that's, you know, not very, very peculiar to me. So I deliberately started reading again. And the first thing I read, because we were in the middle of a plague, I mentioned Boccaccio earlier, was the Decameron, 100 short stories told in the midst of the Black Death in Florence. And I realized Boccaccio was onto something here, short fiction. So I started to read novels of 200 pages or less. And that's why I wrote Great Short Books. I then followed it up with The World in Books, which is 52 works of great short nonfiction, also 200 pages or less. So I think that there's something really to be said for the idea of looking at shorter fiction or nonfiction as a stepping stone and a way to get your reading vibe back, because a lot of us have lost it. And I do think that we are in a crisis of reading right now. It's wonderful to have this program and hear such enthusiasm for books and reading, but it's not, unfortunately, widely shared right now. People are fixed on their screens, especially young people. There's no question about it. Used to sit on the New York City subway and see everybody with a paperback book. Now, of course, everybody is looking at their phone. There's also a crisis in terms of censorship. It's not going away and probably will get worse if the people who are behind Project 2025 have their way. The other issue is AI, and it's a real one, especially for writers. We have this idea that all of the works of combined works of humanity are being fed into this machine that will generate writing eventually. So it's a scary time. The Atlantic magazine recently had a piece that said college students coming into elite colleges can't read a novel. So that's why I've made this pitch for reading short novels. It's like, you know, exercising. You have to start, you don't just go out and run a marathon. You do a short bit of exercise, high intensity, and work your way up. And all of the books I've included in The World in Books are, I think, stepping stones to reading other things. But we really do have to get back to the habit of reading. It's not only good for you intellectually, it's good for you psychologically. I mean, this is a proven fact with many studies. So apart from all these recommendations for great books, I think we really have to get people to say, I really need to start reading again, make a reading resolution, get back into the habit. Read for 15, 20 minutes before you go to bed, and I guarantee you eventually you'll sleep better.
Emily, you know, you and Josh, your co-owner, opened Print not that long ago. And I think maybe probably people came to you and said, really? Aren't people reading fewer books? You're opening a new independent bookstore. And I'm wondering if people said that to you and what you have found about what Ken is talking about, the state of reading.
Yeah, no, I think I would say certainly on the topics of AI and censorship, I absolutely agree with what Kenneth has to say. But I would say at least, and again, maybe my view is a little bit more myopic because, you know, I own a bookstore and my world really is reading. I am reading 75 books at a time. I am, if I'm not here at the store or with my family, I'm reading a book. I can't go more than 48 hours without a book in my hand or I start to twitch. Like that is really my life. My life is very interior that way. And sure, we certainly did get those comments like, really, you know, in the age of Amazon, you know, you're opening a bookstore. But we've been up year over year, and I am seeing tons of people and tons of young people coming in and looking for books. So while I certainly appreciate Kenneth's comment, and I'm sure that's true. And again, I think my view might be myopic. I'm really hoping that the tides are turning and that people are looking to reading more. I mean, certainly book talk is a very popular thing. It is pushing many, many titles out there to the younger generation that is a little bit more screen savvy. So I'm hoping that the tides are turning and that the younger generation is picking up reading a little bit more.
I'm going to go to Marie calling from Addison. Hi, Marie. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm purchasing some books for friends and family for Christmas. And this book is a coffee table book. It's really about workers and the hidden corners of America. And I think it'll help people to better appreciate those people and the rich fabric of America and the various cultures and diversity. this book is called American Character, Surprising Portraits of an Unseen Nation. And the photographer and writer is Peter Gutman.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much for that recommendation. The first recommendation of a coffee table book. And we've been talking a lot about reading, but really spectacular photography is also a really important part of our culture. So thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Carol from Cumberland. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. Oh, I love all these titles. Can't get them all. I have three. They're somewhat older, but they're three of my favorite books. Lessons in Chemistry, Remarkably Bright Creatures, and Midnight Library. Those three from the they are from previously published.
That's okay. That's okay. Books. Thank you for those recommendations, Carol. And you'll like to know if you guys are not able to write books down fast enough, somebody at Maine Public is doing this for you, and we will have a list. I'm not sure when, but we will have a list on Facebook page and on our website at some point in the near future. So thank you for calling in. I'm going to blast through a few emails here. One from Veronica. All-time favorite read this year, North Woods by Daniel Mason. It was unexpected and innovative, a true literary work of art. I cannot recommend this book highly enough. Emily and Kenneth, feel free to jump in as I'm reading out these Facebook posts and emails. Regina on Facebook, When My Mother Was a Mountain, a memoir about the author's month-long solo camping trip to the Black Hills of South Dakota, a Maine author. Casey on Facebook says, George Takei's graphic memoir, They Called Us Enemy. An email from Aviva. Oh, go ahead, Ken.
I just want to jump in because I know we're going to get pushed up against the clock. To remember that we lost Edna O'Brien this year, one of the great writers of our time. And I had included The Country Girls in great short books. And so I would really highly recommend The Country Girls by Edna O'Brien. Certainly not overlooked in that sense, but it's, you know, a much older book. But she is one of the great stylists of our time. She was, and we grieve her loss. So The Country Girls, go and find it. It's part of a trilogy called The Country Girls Trilogy. It's a brilliant book about a young girl growing up in 1950s Dublin.
Thank you. We have an email here from Aviva. I have chosen three books for a reading group I will moderate. None of them are new, but each are important climate fiction. The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. Mm-hmm. Tentacle by Rita Indiana. And The Water Knife by Paolo, Bacigalupi. Those are the recommendations from Aviva. Email from David. Richard Powers' new novel, Playground, is a fantastic addition to his recent series of novels that play with expectations and perceptions of the world. His characters are rich, and he goes to unexpected places in his story building. Headshot by, this is David, a different David on Facebook. Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle, a girls' youth boxing tournament that explores trauma, ambition, and finding your way. An email from Alfred, a great escape read in science and fantasy. Helldivers, a series of 12 books, a post-apocalyptic story. Emily, are post-apocalyptic books in style right now?
I think so too. Yeah, that and the other theme that I, maybe this is more my reading, but I do feel that I'm seeing other women my age gravitating toward this theme as well. Paramenopausal fiction, you know, going along with what I said about Miranda July's All Fours, Claire Lombardo's Same As It Ever Was is another title that I feel kind of captures that theme. Nathan Hill's Wellness, there's some of that in there as well. Just a lot of female rage, I think, is a big topic right now that is being that women my age are gravitating towards.
All righty then. An email from Karen, What If We Get It Right by Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson. Amazing. And about actual climate solutions, engaging, informative, and hopeful. And Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson was on Main Calling just a few weeks ago. So thank you for that recommendation. Ken, you wanted to jump in?
Just throwing out two more because they're now, I guess you would call them movie tie-ins of a sort. Also older books, both of them included in great short books. The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead, which is one of the best books I've read in the last 15, 20 years. It is coming out as a film. And Things Fall Apart, the classic by Chinua Achebe, is going to be made into a series, I believe. And Idris Elba has something to do with it, whether he's in it or producing it, I don't know. But two great books by two great writers of our time.
And speaking of series, Netflix is about to come out with 100 Years of Solitude. So that will be Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Lauren on Facebook writes, Ada B's Down East Adventure is a wonderful book published by a Maine author, illustrated by a Maine artist, and published by Maine Authors Publishing. A fun story about a young girl who moves to Maine and tries to befriend an old salty Mainer. And Lauren adds that Bob Marley, the comedian, reads the audiobook version, which is wonderful as well. An email here from Wallace. I usually read a lot of fiction, but with the state of our democracy at present, I've recently finished a great biography, John Adams by David McCullough. Also finished John Meacham's The Soul of America. I did read a few books of fiction. Bowl Away by Elizabeth McCracken was a terrific story. And I read Jerry Boyle's latest Jack McMurrow story, Hardline. Also read Ta-Nehisi Coates' new book, The Message. Keep on reading. I think you're going to agree with me, Ken, that you can never go wrong with David McCullough or John Meacham.
Neither of whom writes great short books, but they're great books. we can go with that. David McCullough, of course, a Mainer of sorts, recently deceased, really influential to me. Mornings on Horseback, which is the life of a young Theodore Roosevelt, was a book that really influenced my thinking about how to write about history. So I would throw that out there for anybody who wants to go back and look. It's a great book.
An email from Jay. I'd like to put in a shameless plug for a book my daughter Courtney Nalaboff wrote with Ruth Macy called Your Postpartum Body, which is a unique and personal guide to the changes in the body after childbirth. Courtney lives on North Haven and Ruth on the Midcoast. Eric on Facebook, George Oppen for poetry. A resident of Eagle Island in Penobscot Bay. Great poet. A question from George on Facebook. I saw that Joyce Carol Oates has a new set of stories out. Has anyone read and recommended it? Have either of you had a chance?
Alas, I have not.
Okay, well, you're forgiven because there are only so many, as I said, so many hours of the day. An email from Jean. Absolutely anything by the amazing poet Dave Morrison from Camden. For Marie, an overlooked Maine author, John Mandarino. He published a unique book of narratives linked to photos this year from A Box in the Closet. Marianne says Spark. Oh, she didn't see name the author. The novel shares an incredible story of purpose, friendship, and collaboration during a life-changing seminar in Iceland. And Deborah on Facebook, I loved the wonderful new biography of Isabella Stewart Gardner, Chasing Beauty by Natalie Dykstra. And I think I'm going to have them all, but do not send any more because we're out of time. Jacinth on Instagram, I read How to Be a Good Creature by Cy Montgomery over Thanksgiving, and it felt like a well-timed hug from the universe. So I think we all need that. How to Be a Good creature. So anyway, if any others come in by email or Facebook in the next few minutes, we'll be sure to include them on the list. Emily Russo, Kenneth C. Davis, thank you so much for joining us on Maine Calling today for our annual Best and Overlooked Books program. And as I said at the beginning of the program, it is reading weather. It is curling up on a couch with a book weather. And so please enjoy yourself, take advantage. And I hope you find some of these recommendations to your liking. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Theme music composed by Mike Jandro. Our program is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find our past shows and sign up for our weekly newsletter at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.